So, those of you receiving First Communion, I have some questions for you. Don't panic. This won't determine whether you get First Communion or not, all right? But I have some questions for you to help get the homily started. First of all, a real easy one. What was last Sunday? Yes. Easter, exactly. So what does that make today? If yesterday was Easter, yes. No, Easter Sunday was last week. What is today? Heard it at the beginning of Mass. It's the second Sunday of Easter. All right? We're in the season of Easter now. Do any of you know how many Sundays there are in the Easter season? Only First Communicants, no help from the families. You can write her a note and see what she said. How many Sundays? Take a guess. How many Sundays would you guess are in the Easter season? Close. Seven. There are not five, but there are seven Sundays in the Easter season. All right, now we're going to do a little math. All right. How many days in a week? Seven, exactly. 7 days in a week, and there are 7 weeks in the Easter season. So how many days are there in the Easter season? Yes. You're getting help from way back there. 7 times 7 is 49. In the ancient world, the number 7 was regarded as a special number. It signified completeness, all right? So you have 7 days of the week, which is a complete week, 7 days, and then 7 weeks of 7 days each. That makes for a perfect time span. But you know, what gets added in the Easter season is one more day, because we start on a Sunday. 7 times 7 plus 1 is 50. That's how many days there are from Easter to Pentecost, which is the end of the Easter season. 50 days long. Which one of you remembers how long Lent was? How many days are there in Lent? Yes. 40. All right. We tend to get all wrapped up over Lent in preparation for Easter, but there are only 40 days in Lent. There are 50 days in the Easter season. Just by the numbers, it's a bigger season. It's a more important season than Lent. But somehow we tend to forget about that. During this season, we hear about the early church. We hear about Jesus' ascension into heaven. And then we hear about the descent of the Spirit, which is Pentecost, the birthday of the church. And Pentecost happens how many days after Easter? 7 times 7 plus 1 is 50. That's in fact the name. Pentecost refers to 5. All right, so we're in Easter season. We're in a season that's longer than Lent, in some ways more important than Lent. We learn about the risen Jesus and what he means to our lives. Things have changed in the church since Lent. What do you see that's different from what the way the church was during Lent? At least three things you can name. Yes? Now the flowers, but those are decoration. What about this? Yes. White. Yes, it hasn't been washed clean, so it's yellow, right? We'll have to get out the OxyClean. White. White is the vestment that is used when we're celebrating something joyful. What was the color we were using in Lent? Do you remember? Yeah. Purple. All right. We've changed from purple to white. We're now in a time of celebration. Another thing that's different is what happened at the very beginning of Mass. What happened at the beginning of Mass? Yes. You got sprinkled, right? What was that for? Just to annoy you at the beginning of this? No, it's to remind you of your baptism, because at the Easter Vigil is the time when people are welcomed into the church and they were baptized. Last Saturday night, 11 people were baptized here in this font. And for all the Sundays of the Easter season, you will be sprinkled with water to remind you of your baptism. Most of us don't remember our baptism, so it's a time to think about what that baptism means to us. And one other thing that you probably didn't catch. In the readings, we have three readings. There's the Gospel, and usually there's the Old Testament and the New Testament. But rather than the Old Testament reading, during the Easter season, we read from the Acts of the Apostles. The Acts of the Apostles is the story of that early Christian community after Jesus has ascended to heaven and after the Spirit has come down. So it's what happens after Pentecost, which is 50 days after Easter. So that's about what's happening after Pentecost. And that's in that first reading. If you're listening to that first reading, it describes the community and in the beginning how everything was going so well in that community. They lived together. They shared what they had. They broke bread together. All right? That's what you're going to join us today in your first communion. Much like that early community, you join all the Christians who since those days after Pentecost have gathered to celebrate Eucharist. And if we just went by that first reading, one would think that things are going great, right? That's where we got to take a look at the gospel. In the gospel, which actually takes us back to Easter evening, things are not as certain as they are in that first reading. Things haven't been figured out quite as much. The disciples are in a room. And what can you tell me about the doors to that room? Did you hear that little detail? What have they done with the doors to that room? The doors are locked. Why would you lock a door on a room? Why do you lock your door? Exactly, so that no one gets in. They've locked the door, the gospel says, for fear of the Jews. They are afraid of what's outside that door, and they don't want that what is outside to come inside. And then somehow, surprisingly, Jesus appears in the room without having gone through the doors, and that confuses them, as it would confuse anybody. And he says to them twice something. What does he say to them? Yes? Exactly. Peace be with you. So in the midst of this room of these scared disciples who've locked the door, Jesus comes and says, peace be with you. And what goes on throughout the story is about how they come to believe that this is Jesus, the ones there and Thomas who doubted. The word believe is mentioned at least five times in the gospel, and it's mentioned in the first reading and the second reading too. It's all about coming to belief. Coming to believe. All right. If they believe in Jesus, then maybe they share in that peace that he talks about. All right. Believe and peace. And if you are peaceful about something, are you going to hide behind locked doors? Probably not. Okay? One thing that's going on in Easter is Jesus comes to us in surprising ways, in ways we didn't expect, tells us to be at peace and believe in him, and that gives us the strength to unlock doors that we had barred tight to keep others out. Now, you may say, what does this have to do with us? We aren't living 2,000 years ago. I want to tell you a little story about what's going on now that relates to it. It requires going back and doing a little history, though, all right? So, I want to go back to the beginning of this country. At the very beginning of this country, there were slaves in this country. Can any of you tell me what is distinguishing about a slave? What makes a slave a slave? Yes. They tended to be non-white, that's right. But what makes a slave a slave? So everybody here who's an employee is a slave? They probably feel like that on most days. You're right, work is involved, and they tend to be non-white, yes? They were owned by another person. Slavery means that one person owns another person. That's hard for us to understand, isn't it? But that was the way life was back when this country was founded. That's the way life was here in Georgetown at that time. And at that time, the Maryland Province Jesuits, I'm a Jesuit priest, the Maryland Province Jesuits ran plantations in southern Maryland. And the Maryland Province Jesuits owned slaves. Yes, the priests owned slaves to run the plantations. That's hard to understand. It's a fact. At the same time that we had those plantations to support the Jesuits, we were also starting schools like Georgetown. The problem was, in the early 19th century, Georgetown had financial problems. So when you have financial problems, what do? You think about what you're going to sell so that you can solve that problem. Looking at what they owned, their property, The Jesuits decided to sell the slaves from the plantation. The Jesuits, the priests, these Christians who would preach about brotherhood every Sunday, decided to sell the enslaved men, women, and children to planters in Louisiana so that they had enough money to make sure that Georgetown and other works kept going. It's somewhat inconceivable, isn't it? But it happened. It happened, and families were broken up, and families were sent off to Louisiana. This hasn't actually been hidden in history, but it's kind of been hiding in plain sight until something a couple years ago. Georgetown University had renovated two buildings, and they were going to dedicate them. And at that time, they were going to give them the names that they had before. However, the names that they had were the names of the two Jesuits responsible for the sale, Milady and McSherry, Father Milady and McSherry. And people said, this doesn't make sense. We cannot do it. Not people. Students said, this doesn't make sense. We shouldn't do it. Because of that, Georgetown has studied this problem and has gone into this problem of what does it mean for an institution, for Jesuits, to have had slaves, but then sold slaves. Been working on this for about a year, and this past week, something kind of extraordinary happened. On April 18th, over at Georgetown, there was what was called a liturgy of remembrance, contrition, and hope. All right? Up until this time, both Georgetown and the Jesuits of the Maryland province were like the disciples in that upper room. The doors had been locked on this issue of slaveholding and of the sale of slaves. But last Tuesday, the door was opened a bit. At that liturgy, the president of Georgetown University apologized publicly to the descendants, many of whom were there, about not only the slaveholding, but the sale of their ancestors. Tim Kosicki, the president of the Jesuit Conference, on behalf of Jesuits throughout the United States, also made that apology and also asked for forgiveness from the descendants. Opening doors is a scary thing. You never know what's going to happen. The disciples were very comfortable in that upper room with the door closed. Jesus came in the middle and told them to be peaceful and believe. And you know, they had to go outside to hear what we heard in that first reading. So too what's going on with Georgetown and the Maryland Province Jesuits and the descendants of those enslaved people who were sold. The door has been opened. We don't know exactly what's going to happen. We're not sure of that, but we know that a door opening is better than a locked door. And that's what Easter is about. It's knowing that Jesus is with us in that room and that we shouldn't be afraid. And so in everyone's lives, there are doors that are locked to keep out those things that make us fearful. The Easter season, these 50 days, are about feeling the presence of Jesus with us right here and now, believing in that and being so encouraged by the peacefulness that brings that we can open doors that we were fearful of. And then we can maybe follow what Jesus said when he says to Thomas, do not be unbelieving, but believe. Do not be unbelieving, but believe. And if you really believe, you will share in my peace, and that peace will allow you to at least name your fears and begin to open the doors that block what you think you are afraid of.